Good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Access Radio 104.6 FM Planet. Shalom, Lenny.
Shalom, Joan.
Well, we're delighted to welcome back in our studio Lenny Bloxberg, who always has very interesting things to say. So, Lenny, what are we going to talk about this time?
Well, recently the Gluckman Report on teen suicide was released. It's actually dated the 26th of July, 2017. And there's been a series of articles on national radio talking about it. And it quite struck me that the principal findings of the Gluckman Report were basically a concept which is very near and dear to my heart, which is the concept of hope. And you and I have talked about how you wanted me to talk about my biography, and I wanted to talk about the importance of hope in society. So this kind of gives me a really interesting opportunity, because we all know that we have an abominably high teen suicide rate in New Zealand.
Highest in the OECD.
Yes. And so the previous government commissioned a special report to be put together by the chief science advisor, Sir Peter Gluckman. And that report has just been released. And the principal finding of the report is that the predominant reason for the very high teen suicide rate is because we have shifted from a society that focuses on support to a society that focuses on punishment.
True.
Well, what this does is it strips people of hope. Essentially, if you step out of line, I'm going to come down on you like a ton of bricks, and I'm going to get this thing sorted out. And if you get it right, well, that's what you're supposed to do, so what's the big deal? Just get on with it. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And so what happens is young people have very high consequences for trying to do anything, because if it's not perfect, they're in for a lot of grief, a lot of strife, and that strife might be a stern talking to, it might be a beating. But I mean, let's just not even go to the extreme ones. Just go to the stern talking to and the reprimand. If you try to do something and it doesn't quite work out as expected. And if you actually just do what you're supposed to do, what's expected of you, you get nothing. What's even worse is you get no support at all. So basically, in my life, I've done some pretty amazing things. But actually, I've never done anything. Everything I've ever done has been virtually everything I've ever done has been because I was in a team where I made a contribution to the team that made the team do something amazing. But I couldn't have done that on my own. And I remember I had some preliminary data for a cancer therapeutic, and I went to Merck, and they thought it was really impressive. They liked it. They said, great, you get this through phase two clinical trials, and we want to put money into it. I'm sorry, but phase two clinical trials is, a couple $100 million, and I just don't have that in my back pocket, so I guess we're not going to go anywhere, and that's the kind of culture that we've got of lack of support, where if you do it all by yourself with no help and nobody else, good on you. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? So what? If you attempt anything and it doesn't work, you're subject to ridicule. Obviously, you failed once, so you can never be trusted again. Or possibly even worse. And this is this culture that we've built up in our society, which completely strips people of hope. So, I mean, on the surface, hope is based on this concept that you actually have to believe that you have a reasonable chance of success.
Or being accepted.
No, you have to, in order to try, in order to make an effort, you have to believe you have a reasonable chance of succeeding. And in order to try, you have to believe that the consequences of failure will not be insurmountably catastrophic. Okay? So if the consequences of walking across the street are insurmountably catastrophic, you'll wait till the traffic clears before you cross because the consequences are too severe. There's a lot of traffic on the road. Just wait a couple minutes. It's a real simple equation. But if everything around you in life, the consequences feel like you're always confronted with insurmountable consequences for even the most slight, subtle infraction, you're not going anywhere. And if the thing that you need on the other side of the store, on the other side of the street that you need to get to, is unachievable, even if you got across the street, it's totally unattainable. You can't get it anyway. Okay? So there's no incentive to try. And people stop trying. And when people stop trying, that's when you believe there's no hope in ever trying again, that's where this teen suicide comes from.
And it's a lot of depression with it, too?
Depression becomes part of that. If you go back to some basic biology, so if you look at what is the basic underlying biology that drives all organisms, whether you're a tomato or a dog or a human or a fish, doesn't matter. What's the single basic driving force behind biological creatures? And it would be preservation of self. It's pretty simple. Humans have a small problem with this. We wake up in the morning and say, oh, bugger. Preservation of self is actually a lot of work. And we have to actually grapple with this concept. A salmon swimming upstream doesn't ask itself, weigh up the issues in terms of its likelihood of success or failure. It doesn't weigh up the reasons as to whether it's worth it. The salmon just goes upstream. Humans actually look at the situation and think, this is actually a lot of work. And so this whole idea of having hope for humans, for a salmon, it's not a basic biological need. For humans, it actually is. And this is one of the things that our society seems to have forgotten. Jewish culture, if we go back to part of where this program all starts from, Jewish culture is always taught in the importance of helping people to believe in themselves to achieve something. And once people believe in themselves, then they'll actually do what it takes to get there. Now, if you believe, an example I tell entrepreneurs is the difference between Michael Hill and poor people in South Auckland. So when Michael Hill lost everything in a fire, and he lost his home, he lost his savings, he lost everything, he had nothing. He had less than somebody in South Auckland on the dole. But he had one thing that they don't have. He had hope. So he looked at this thing and he said, right, I'm going to start over again and I'm going to do things differently because I know that I can succeed. I can achieve something. And I know I have people who will back me and will support me. And so he put together a plan and he gathered his friends and his investors and he started out and he became internationally recognized as a top entrepreneur. And he's been very successful with what he's done. Whether you like Michael Hill's business or not is irrelevant. He's been very successful at it because he believed he could, starting from nothing.
And others believed in him too.
Others supported him. So if going back to in relationship to the Gluckman Report, he believed that he could. He believed there was a possibility he could. And he got support. So he was able to communicate his vision in a way that he was supported. So he was able to achieve things. And what's happening with a lot of people in our society is they're being told that if they step out of line, they're going to get punished. And if they do it right, well, isn't that what you're supposed to be doing? What's the point? Why are you telling me? Okay? And so this is where adults wind up not being able to find the energy to try to enter the workforce. And we have a large number of people who are chronically unemployed and depressed as adults. And teens start feeling that there's no point in going on and doing anything. And you have teen suicide.
And that's because they have no hope.
because they have
success
no,
or hope of believing in themselves.
They have no hope. Hope is the fundamental thing, and it's a combination of this need to believe that the goal is achievable, that you could, there's a realistic chance you could achieve that goal, okay, and this need to believe that the consequences if you fail will not be insurmountably catastrophic, okay? So if you think that if you make one small step, it all falls apart and it's over for you, your life is over, you're going to be very, very reticent to actually try that. If you think that even if you succeeded, even if you did everything right, there's no hope of you succeeding, well, you're not going to try that. And if everything looks that way, you have no hope. So hope is a combination of those two things, and that's what support is all about. It's not about having no consequences, because, you know, so one of the things that you're going to see a lot of people arguing is, well, we need to move from a society of punishment to a society of support, does that mean we need to be, you know, mamby-pamby nice to everybody and not have any consequences? Well, it's kind of like if you're driving your car and you're trying to pull into a parking space and I'm guiding you and I say, right, turn to the right, not a little less, turn back a little bit to the left. And as soon as I say turn a little bit to the left, you swing the wheel around wildly all the way to hard stop on the left, jump out of the car, put a bolt in the steering mechanism so it can never be turned back to the right, and then go back in and say, right, is that good enough? Does that make sense? So why would it make sense to suggest, when the Gluckman Report says that we need to shift from a society that's predominantly focused on punishment back to a society predominantly focused on support, why would it make sense to suggest that to even ask if that means we should stop punishing people and stop having consequences? Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, you'll hear that debate going on. Is there really any difference? Okay, you have two sides of an argument. Support, punishment, okay, turning right, turning left. And you suggest that you've turned a little bit too far to the right, so you swing it as far as it'll go to the left and put a bolt in the mechanism so it can't go back to the right. And this is what a lot of people will discredit the report based on, okay? And it makes about that much sense. So there's actually a balance in there. There have to be consequences, but there has to be, the consequences cannot be insurmountably catastrophic.
And immediate.
Oh, they can be immediate. They can be long-term. Humans actually have the ability to understand long-term consequences, okay? So another aspect of this whole thing about hope is feeling that you're listened to. And so one of I've been listening to some of the experts on national radio talking about the different aspects of this, and there are two of them that really struck me. One of them was the primary finding, and the other one was this concept about, specifically for teenagers, they were saying that teenagers tend to think with the emotional brain predominantly, and they relate to the world through their emotional brain. And parents respond by trying to bring them back into a rational space and saying, right, you're a little bit overwrought on this, and this would make more sense if you kind of dealt with it this way. And what that does is that the child then thinks that they're not being listened to. Their views don't matter. They don't count. And there's no hope of being able to achieve an understanding here, because their views are being dismissed before they start. And I realized that, actually, I'd had precisely that issue in a conversation with my daughter the other night. She's stressing over exams. We've got NCAA exams coming up. And I'm trying to keep her focused on a program for studying. So she and I have worked out a project plan, and these are the things that she said she needs to do for each class. So we've laid it out where it's all quite achievable and doable. We just got to stick with it, and I'm trying to get her to hold to it. And the more I get her to hold to it, the more she's freaking out on me. So I was listening to this report, this psychologist talking about the need to address their emotional needs so that they are heard and they feel like what they say matters. I had an interesting conversation with my daughter last night. It was actually last night we had the conversation. It was great. And I told her this was what was going on. And she said, "You're right, you're not listening to my views." And I said, "No, that's how you feel." I said, "Now, this is what I've been doing. So I'm listening to your views, And I hear your experience, and I hear your response to it. And I'm feeling that you've gone down. I've decided that you've gone down an emotional pathway, which is non-productive, and it's going to lead you to consequences that you don't like later on. So I'm trying to nip that in the bud and say, nope, that's not a valid way to go. You need to go this way. And what you're hearing is your emotions and your experience are invalid.
Mm.
And I'm not listening to you. I want you to believe this. And she said, right, I can see that. So what I'm saying is wrong. No, what you're saying is not wrong. Mm. It's just going to lead you to an inappropriate consequence. And she asked for an example. So I said, okay. A friend of mine put up a Facebook post. Big study came out, showed that religious kids tend to be bullies more often than non-religious kids. Okay? It was a big study. They compiled dozens of studies with thousands and thousands of individuals. A lot of data. And it was pretty conclusive that religious kids from Christian religious homes tend to be bullies more often than the average population, and a lot more often than non-religious families, kids from non-religious families. And so her response was to put it on Facebook and say, I agree. And my daughter said, what's wrong with that? I said, exactly. As soon as she says, I agree, her religious friends will say, well, I disagree because. And now you have this huge body of data, thousands of points of people of data that's been collected. The data doesn't agree or disagree. It doesn't have an opinion. It's simply data. Okay? Now, you can argue that this is consistent or inconsistent with my results, with my experience, but you can't say you agree or disagree. And as soon as you disagree, her religious friends will chime in and invalidate the entire report by saying they disagree and reduce it to nothing more than an opinion rather than a body of data. And then we talked about how people use this kind of inappropriate relationship between data and opinion to delegitimize Israel. And she said, oh my God, I see what you're saying. I said, right. Well, I'm not saying that your experience is wrong. You said you agree. But that's going to have consequences for you later on that you're not going to like. And she's like, right, I get that. And so she was being listened to, and she was seeing that I was actually listening to her and actually paying attention. And all of a sudden, she felt a lot more interested and engaged and wanting to be part of what we were doing to work on improving her study. And her studying technique, since for the rest of the day and this morning again, has been much, much better. She's been much more focused because she believes that she matters. She believes that she's being listened to and that her views are important now. Okay? So she's believing that she has a reasonable chance of success. And the consequences of failure are not that I'm going to come down on her like a ton of bricks. It's that I'm going to try to help her understand something, and she's actually believing that. And that's why she's more engaged. Now, she's not in danger of teen suicide, being a teen suicide, but she's suffering from the same lack of hope, which is from the culture that we've built around mm-hmm. ourselves. And this is what I find rather interesting that's come out of the Gluckman Report, is it's really bringing home how important it is to make sure that the people that we engage with, and it's not just children, the people we engage with around us are feeling like they have hope.
So it's all members of society.
Right. So as an employer, as a businessman, if I tell my staff that if they get out of line, they're going to be fired. And if they do it right, well, that's what they get paid for. What do you want, a medal? I mean, I've actually heard these discussions. Those are not made up. Those are real quotes, okay? How do you think my staff are going to feel? Now, on the other hand, if I'm actually not paying them any more, but making them feel like what they do matters, and in fact, what I've often done with my own businesses is I've explained to people that we're delivering something that actually is affecting people's lives and making their lives better. And you know what? The rubbish men do that. I've actually done that with rubbish. I used to go out running and run alongside the rubbish guys, and the rubbish guys would say, "Well, I'm just a lowly rubbish guy." I said, "Hell no. Do you realize what this place would be if you guys didn't do what you do? I've watched you guys. I've seen you run back and pick up the little thing that fell out, and I know what a difference that makes to our community." And suddenly, my neighborhood becomes the cleanest street in the region, you know? Because these guys feel like they matter. And I'm not paying them bugger all more. Mm-hmm. All I'm doing is I'm making them feel like what they do matters.
Is of value.
Is of value. They have a chance of success if they put an extra effort in. And success in this case is really nothing more than feeling better about themselves because somebody noticed. And the consequences of failure are very slim. Because nobody's threatening them with, you know, "I'm going to call the cops because you missed that piece of paper that fell out of that bag." Right? So you see, it's how we get more out of our employees. When we interact with our friends, it's how we get more out of our relationship with our friends. It's how we get more out of our children. And how we prevent teen suicide is basically show people that they have value. Show people that there's a reasonable chance of success if they try.
So what does Peter Gluckman say should happen? What measures can we take to implement some of his advice?
So Peter Gluckman has not actually said anything. Peter Gluckman supervised a report that was put together by a group of top New Zealand and international psychologists that he supervised. He has refrained from making any statement about it, and he will be quietly advocating with the government to see that this is used to inform policy going forward. Okay, so he's trying to be very careful not to say, "Now do this."
Mm.
But it's going to inform the way that we look at things and the way that we interact and the way that we make new laws. Well, at least that's his hope. I understand from what he's done. He's tried to stay very much out of the policy-making side of it. So the report doesn't actually tell you what policies need to be done. It gives general ideas and directions. And the fundamental finding is, really, that we've dropped the ball on recognizing that human beings have a biological need for hope.
So when you say he hopes to influence policy, so these are who are the policy makers in that particular area or across the board? Would it be under the health system, under child, youth, and family, or the justice, or across everything?
So Peter Gluckman is the chief science officer of New Zealand. He advises the New Zealand government, the parliament, and he would be advising whichever branch of government he felt had an influence in part of this policy. So obviously, dealing with social welfare and dealing with youth is the most obvious one. And if you were going to take a very narrow view, you would strictly work with psychology and mental health care. If you took a slightly broader view, you would start looking at education. If you take a slightly broader view, you start looking at employment and social welfare and how we manage those programs. And if you take a broader view still, you'd be looking at simply the way that people interact in Parliament to set a paradigm for how we go about interacting as a society.
I think that's very valid at the moment.
Well, that's what I'm reading in this report.
Mm. And you heard the report on the radio, but I haven't read anything in the press or anything like that about it.
Well, you won't read anything in the press. The New Zealand Herald has functionally laid off all their reporters, and they've canceled all their wire subscriptions. So their news, they have a couple of editors, and they grab free stuff that comes off blogs off the internet. So the Herald might grab a blog that I write about this and tidy it up to be a newspaper article. But they're not going to write an article about it. That's not what they do anymore. So the Herald doesn't have that. sorry.
Shock, horror.
Well, That's my understanding. I mean, because if you read the Herald, there was a point at which all the wire press credits disappeared, and I was told that that's because they canceled them.
Okay.
There was a point where they laid off all the people I knew who were reporters, and there was something in the news that they had laid off all their reporters. It's like, okay. And they get their, you can tell from reading it that they get most of their stuff essentially off blogs. That's just how they get their news. And they do I think the Herald does a great job of compiling the blogs, newsworthy blogs off the internet. And I still read the Herald for that reason. But they're not going to write an investigative journalism article about the Gluckman Report. The Gluckman Report came out. I tend to follow science issues, and there were several psychologists that have been interviewed on national radio about the report and what's in it, and I've found that quite interesting.
And is there anything in the sector of the education department or in the Department of Social Welfare or any of those organizations that mention it, that they've interested in it?
Of course not. It's just been released. It's brand new. Okay. This is a new thing that's just come out. People in these organizations have to find it, digest it, and look at what the implications are for what they are doing. And they will do that. But it's just been released. It's, you know, it's officially dated July 26th, 2017.
Well, July to November is a few months.
Well, it's been out for essentially three months and a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that they're looking at it. But in terms of policy and how long it takes to make policy, and in the interim, there's been a change of government, so there's been a lot of other issues that these organizations need to be looking at. I'm sure they'll be looking at this, but it is unlikely that anyone will have a statement about how that will influence their policy yet. I'm hoping that by the end of the year there will be.
Just which, we've got 3 minutes left, but we will go on into the next week. But which department, which area is most likely to pick this up? You know, do you think it would be education department or Ministry of Social?
Most likely it's going to be mental health care.
Right.
So teen suicide is normally dealt with under mental health care. The problem with dealing with it under mental health care is that the only people that mental health department will deal with are those people who are so far down the line that they're already demonstrating a real danger to themselves. Mm-hmm. So recently I was one of my friends who's a mental health care worker is complaining that he's been having to decline patients that have mental health care issues, because children with mental health care issues, because they're so busy dealing with people who are suffering from abuse and child molestation and physical trauma from severe abuse that they don't actually have time to deal with mental health care. Bear in mind that being upset because you got beaten is not the same as being depressed where there's no reason. There's a very different thing. So they can't do mental health care.
Nini, we have to stop this now, and we will continue for the next program. So thank you for listening, and don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10 when we can hear the next position of Lenny's talk. And we would really like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.